Welcome to the Humanity Matters podcast, where we discuss and reflect on faith and philosophy, leadership and social issues. We want to engage in ideas and what it means to be a free human being in the pursuit of human flourishing. For more information, please visit our website, philipfletcher.org. And now, the Humanity Matters podcast.
TV to doing it more and more in this really unhealthy way online, comment sections, text messages, and kind of seeing it develop. And so I have a growing concern for young people, because what you witness is not often even discourse at all. And so just have a heart for helping people maybe get a little bit more comfortable with it and better at it. So I'll stop there and pass the mic.
Thank you. And thanks so much for having me here. It's a great pleasure. As Liz said, I'm Sherry Simon, and I've been in clinical practice for about 36 years. And I will tell you, through that practice, I learned so much about civil discourse, because I grew up in a little bubble with, honestly, a bunch of white kids. And I knew nothing about the bigger world. And in not knowing that, my perspective was so limited. So it was only as I got out and got an education and then went to graduate school and then began my practice and began to see all sorts of people in my office that I began to see how big the world was. And I so appreciated the film that I saw you guys in before this, because I see that you're already getting that education. The importance of going out and experiencing people who live a different life than you live is what is going to educate you to be able to be a great communicator with folks. Because when you know more about the world, then what you learn is to listen, because there's so much that we don't know. In 2016, I founded Pax Christi Little Rock. And that, again, was a huge growth experience for me. It came on the heels of being involved with the Honduras mission for about 9 years at Christ the King. And what that gave me, what that taught me, and I heard a couple of you guys say this here, it transformed my life, because it gave me opportunities to meet other people who are very different from me, and who before, and certainly in my younger years, I might have disagreed with, because I hadn't walked their walk. I had no idea, you know, that this was there, that these folks, you know, lived such a different experience than me. But finding that out will grow you. There's no doubt about that. I will just say this, because I saw Nicholas here earlier. He just did an interview with me. Thank you so much. He wrote an excellent story. If you get a chance to go to the Arkansas Catholic and read it, on our mission trip just a couple of weeks ago to the southern border. Do things like that in your life. Go to places where you meet people who do not walk your walk, who walk a different walk, and you will be different for that. You will grow, you will learn, and in regards to civil discourse, you will learn not to disagree so quickly with people. And you need to learn the walk that they have, and listen, and grow your own perspective instead of coming from a narrow perspective. I see that y'all are already doing that. It's wonderful.
What's going on, young people? Y'all doing good? That's good. Thanks for being here, Father Jeff. Thank you for the invitation and all that. So Dr. Philip Fletcher, I live in Conway, Arkansas, just up the road. And nonprofit, City Health Outreach, that was talked about in the introduction. But on the side, I embrace discourse. I want to be where all the tension is. So probably since 2014, 15 maybe, I saw where people were talking past one another. You know, everybody's got their perspectives, everybody's got their beliefs. And I decided to, every once in a while, at our local coffee shops in Conway, find whatever the most controversial topic was, and invite people out. And I wanted everybody to come. And I had three rules. And one was the first one right there. Life and dignity of the human person. That everybody that was in that space that was participating was made in the image and likeness of God. And that was fundamental. And because of that, everything that proceeded from that, secondly, everybody was to be heard. Regardless of how objectionable, and that's subjective, objectionable the information that you heard come across. Because whatever that individual was communicating, it mattered to them for some reason. Now, the question became, how can I understand why it is he or she believes whatever he or she believes? But the only way to do that was you had to, shut your mouth and listen. but not only physically shut your mouth, but like shut your mouth in your head, because a lot of times we try to create an argument while the person is talking, and so you're not even listening anyway, but actually actively listen. And then the third thing was, I'm not asking you to agree, I'm not asking you to disagree, but did you learn something? And so what influences that, I think, is helpful, and we'll talk about it. So Martin Buber is a Jewish theologian. He had a book called Eyes Out, and he speaks about how the importance of this interaction that happens between two human beings, right? And I took that and applied it to difficult conversations, that when you have a conversation with somebody, there are things that you fundamentally believe and that you communicate those. You don't have to move from those. But at the same time, Yaharia, she has fundamental things as well that she wants to communicate. She doesn't have to move from those as well. But can I listen to her? Can she listen to me? And as we're listening to one another, Mark Buber says there's that holy moment of the I thou, where we recognize the dignity, the transcendent worth, the existence, and then we walk away. I don't have to accept what she said. She doesn't accept what I said, but I understand more of why she said what she said, and maybe we can be just a little bit more persuadable. So those are my three things that guides everything I'm gonna talk about here today, because in those spaces, one thing I've always heard is, hey, thank you, Dr. Fletcher, because you know what? I felt like a human being. I felt like I was heard, because when I try to talk about it on social media and things like that, I'm not listened to, you know? But we'll get into more with that.
Excellent.
So I guess just stop here. We'll do this kind of periodically as we go. Any thoughts come to mind, questions, comments about your experience with civic discourse? You ever seen a really good one? Things like that? What's that?
I don't know about a good one.
I just didn't give them the whole experience, but when we were talking about this the first night, about kind of what this was about, I related a very brief story about my next door neighbors that moved in from California. They're great people. We've had them over. We do not see anything alike. But one of the spouses steps in and won't let go. And so I finally said to her one night, and I am not proud of myself. I had girded my loins for this evening. And Dave and I, my husband and I, are not super holy people, but we say, you know, we can be kind and we can listen, and we in that way can kind of show Jesus, because they're not necessarily believers. So, but this night, I had to tell Patricia, I said, oh gosh, I'm going over there for dinner, I'm girding my loins. She goes, oh Liz, you'll be fine. I said, no, I think I'm going to get up and walk out if one more thing happens. So I'm not proud of myself, and I didn't do it dramatically. But what happened was, I finally said, can't we just agree to disagree? This is my point. And she looked at me and she said, no, we can't. And so I got up and I said, thank you for the lovely evening. The gin and tonic was really nice, but I think I'm done. So I'm not proud of my reaction. I need to know how to do that better. But we do get in situations where with these neighbors where, I mean, they can't walk away. Like, they are going to beat us down until we accept. And so that's kind of what I told them I saw this being. How do we navigate? How do we do this? So sure. I'm not proud that I walked out. I'm just going to say I went to confession about it.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Someone will respond to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I do think sometimes you have to set limits. But Liz, I have also experienced, sort of pushbacks on social media, and when people have a tendency perhaps to not want to listen to your thoughts and only have their thoughts. One thing that I've tried, and it's been successful sometimes and not successful sometimes, is to continue to let them talk for a while, because oftentimes they will get themselves, if they're just very narrow-minded, into a corner and even hear themselves, in that corner a little bit. But I do know that sometimes you do have to set limits, because the night goes on and you at some point have to go
home. Two years.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never had that experience in my office, and my sessions are only for an hour. So
you get to kick them out.
That's right. I do know that I do try to avoid, and you didn't do this, but I do try to use I statements, which I try to keep it with, this is how I feel, this is what I think about this, not telling them what they should do, what they should feel. So that's, just one little tool. But any thoughts, Dr. Phil?
I think it depends on what we're talking about. I think there are some fundamental non-negotiables. I think the sacredness of life is a non-negotiable. And I think there's some hills that you have to choose to die on. So that could be, you just turn and walk the other direction.
Right.
Because I can't, if someone is persuaded that human life is disposable, or there is a justification to depersonalize an individual or a group. Well, there's no middle ground here. Again, it's like what I talked about. There's this particular fundamental things I'm just not going to move on, because if we would be coherent in our thinking, then something as fundamental as that is going to influence other things that you're arguing for, right? There are other things, and I think because we live in a pluralist society, right? So America, you're free to worship whoever you want, you're free to vote however you want, you're free to make however much you want, so on and so forth, go, schools wherever you want. There are things then, those what would be considered like gray areas, where we can have this back and forth, right? Where we don't have all the answers to, where we're going to have to figure out how is it that we can work together and move together, while at the same time, I'm not about to violate my fundamental beliefs, right? And I think that's where, if it's a discussion like that, or a topic like that, an idea like that, then I'm willing to, go a marathon discussion with you. So I think it's discerning, what is it that we're talking about here? For young people like yourselves and for all of us, determining what are those hills I'm willing to die on, and what are those I'm willing to spend some time and really do the hard work at, so that I can learn more about myself first, learn about my neighbor who I'm having a discussion with, and maybe there's something I can massage, because I've learned something new. Maybe I'm a little too narrow on this, but also maybe I'm a little too broad on this, and I need to bring it back in again, and I've learned that because of somebody's experience, so that's my
thank
you. So go back and have cookies and
I don't know, my husband thanked me for walking out.
Pick something a lot easier.
Because yes, that was beautifully said. One way that I've learned to deal with that, is, well, certainly there, I've had lots of discussions with folks online and in person about different issues, and that's exactly right. If it is an issue of moral importance to you, you don't want to move on that, you know? But perhaps these have been your friends for 30 years. If there's a way that you can find these gray areas that Dr. Fletcher is talking about, find those other areas where maybe there is some movement and redirect, if they will redirect, to those areas, and you can continue to have something of a relationship there and grow that.
Has anyone ever had or tried to argue with a troll online and then not realize that he was a troll? That ever happened to you? You're the troll? Get out! But I think it's important, a couple things. Sometimes the people you're discussing things with, it's a totally unidirectional discussion. You don't even need to be present for that discussion because it's not actually a dialogue. They are, they're on a soapbox, they're just trying to communicate things, but they're doing so in a way that sounds like they're wanting to hear what you have to say or to hear your response. And it takes some experience, some wisdom, and some prudence to recognize when that's happening. And then, that's one thing, but then the second part is, you may not be equipped in that moment. You may not have the good presence of mind. It might have been at the end of a really bad day, and you're not kind of at your best. You may not have what is necessary to give to this person to actually listen to hear what they have to say adequately. And sometimes, in those moments, it's perfectly fine to walk out. I don't have what it takes to be a part of this particular discussion. Hopefully, the more experience you have, it's more of a rare instance, but some people, they're going through a lot of difficult things, and they're actually very difficult to discuss things with, and that's okay. But do not project onto them the feelings that they're making you feel, so to speak, because of, like Dr. Phil said, this number one issue. That is a human person, a precious creation of God, who's going through something. And so that doesn't mean you can write them off or entirely to depersonalize them in your mind, which sometimes we're like, can you believe what he said? But instead, just to realize they're going through something. I don't have what is necessary in this moment to be fully present and hear them. That's okay to realize. But it takes some experience to realize your own limits and just the way some people kind of process some of the things they're going through, but also the way they communicate things.
To add to that, you guys are experiencing the backlash from the pandemic. And what I saw personally, and I'd be interested to hear what y'all think about this, is I saw a huge increase in the conflict in discourse during and after this pandemic. It was remarkable to me what people were willing to say, but it does show what Father Jeff is saying. These often are very wounded people who perhaps were very isolated during the pandemic. Perhaps they were watching, you know, some news that scared them a whole lot. And so they were out there trying to fix things in their own way. That's so important to be aware of that. You're often talking to someone who has a lot of pain, a lot of hurt inside, and this is just sort of their way to try to handle that. And I'm sure y'all have seen some of that, right?
Yeah, that was like,
2020 was like God opening the seals in Revelation. I mean, if you really think about it, yeah, the pandemic, yeah, what was going on with the protests, George Floyd, and police interactions, yeah, the election. Like, it was just a perfect storm of people being able to, like, argue back and forth with each other. You know, and then if you're locked down and all I've got is my phone and my computer and everything coming across the screen, then, you know, if I can't be next to you, I'll just argue with you.
That's right.
You know? And I have this comfort of anonymity, or I know that you're not gonna be able to get in my face because we're separated and so on and so forth. So yeah, that was a crazy time. And I think we're all still seeking to navigate, and it just takes time to recover. I don't know how to talk to each other like we're human beings.
Yeah. Right.
like we got some common sense in my mind. So. I mean, sometimes what it comes down to, like, talk to somebody like you got some sense.
You know, something you said, Dr. Fletcher, is part of your rules is you have to recognize the dignity of this human person, all of the respect, all of the honor that goes into just being an image of God, but also that beautiful image of God is saying things that perhaps you find extremely objectionable. And I think one of the marks, or one of the real challenges of today's discourse is people have mostly lost that skill of differentiating between the human being and their dignity and their point of view or their positions, their conclusions. Nowadays, if someone thinks a certain way, they are no longer of the same level as the rest of society. So you are allowed, based on the way someone views the world, to think that they are less than. They are, what was that? There was a buzzword going around, the unmentionables, or is that one? Deplorables, yeah, deplorables. And, you know, their positions might certainly be deplorable, but that doesn't make them as a human being deplorable. And so I think that's a really difficult thing, especially, I remember being young, is how do I even relate, associate with people that I find to have very troubling outlooks on life? And I just want to maybe invite y'all, do y'all find that difficult to even relate to, talk to, spend time with people that live life or maybe think about life in an extremely different way than you do? What are some of maybe the ways that that manifests? Or like, what I mean is like, what specifically, if you had to point at what is difficult about it? Any ideas? Sounds like you want to say something, or it doesn't sound like, looks like you want to say something.
living, I can't put this into words.
We don't mind word salads, go ahead.
Just putting it into, just like having to live with someone who has just a completely different opinion from you, it just, I'm sorry, I left my brain.
That's okay.
Back to me. Back
yeah,
to
we'll
me.
Come back, you think about it. Yes, ma'am.
It's like a constant argument with that person. It's like a never-ending battle of just fighting them.
Sure. So like, the only way that y'all relate is by pointing out how much y'all disagree with each other? Okay, yeah, that can be a really frustrating relationship.
Honestly, Dr. Phil was talking about how it's like, I feel like it's the hardest whenever it's the fundamental things that we disagree on. And so for me, it's like whenever I come up, you know, more and more in our society, we have like people that just don't believe in really any kind of God or really even care to think about it. And so for me, it's the hardest whenever it's somebody who doesn't believe in any kind of higher power. And I think more and more, like, we think we are our own higher power. It's that kind of Nietzschean philosophy, if you will. If we can't agree on that basic principle of there being a God, I find it hard to have any kind of conversation because all of my thought comes from that basic assumption.
Sure.
And like, I believe that there is a God, and then especially that he's a personal God.
Yeah.
Who loves you uniquely, and that's why we have life and dignity.
Sure. So to summarize, when you disagree about first principles, which is to say some of the most basic truths you believe about reality, when you disagree so deep down, it's not only highly likely that you're going to disagree about a lot of other things, but that where it's so difficult to have that really, really fundamental discussion with people that it's very taxing of your energy, your emotions, all of that. But, you know, I would agree that's a common experience. Parker?
Again, Parker, stand up so everybody can hear you. If y'all don't mind standing up, because you know I'm old.
Another thing I think is an issue in today's world is a lot of time when you try discussing like issues like abortion or things like that, with people, if, when you're like just talking about their a person's view, they feel like you're their that you are like attacking them, not just their viewpoint. And so they end up taking it as an insult, and it leads to people getting angry, hostile, and makes it a lot less civil discussion. And it makes it difficult to have discussions.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and that's a fair response, I think, from people, because your ideas aren't exactly you, but they have helped mold you into the person you are. So if someone's calling into question your fundamental views of reality, you might expect a personal response like that than taking it personally. It doesn't mean you've done something wrong necessarily, but I think that it's a common thing that people experience that might, let's say, cause people to be more resistant to entering into those kinds of dialogues. Maybe just one or two more.
If I could just say something, Parker, I think you hit on it there, because the minute we get defensive, you know, the minute we think they're attacking us, not our ideas, then that keeps the fire going, because when we become defensive, we want to hit back. And if there's a way to realize in that moment, just to be centered in that idea that they are arguing from their point of view, their ideas, and they are trying to defend them from you. They're not necessarily hitting you. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they go there. But to be aware that that does not take your own dignity away in any way. They can't do that. You've already got it. So to keep that in mind is very important when you are in a conflicted argument, because if you can stay calm and if you can stay centered, it's going to go a lot better, no matter what they do.
Yeah, I think that's maybe a good example to move on to. What we want is to be able to be really good and confident in civil discourse. We don't want to avoid it because it's difficult. We want Catholics especially to be so confident in their beliefs, which isn't necessarily certain, but confident that you can communicate what you believe and why you believe it, and be open to hearing what other people believe as well. And that there's a skill there that can be learned. And I just really want to encourage y'all, it may not seem that way right now, but it is truly a skill that can be learned when it comes into this, entering into discourse. And Dr. Fletcher, I think, mentioned kind of a fundamental aspect of it is, just because someone is arguing with you and wanting you to change your position, and they may not even make some really good points, that does not mean you must actually move on in the argument. You don't have to say, oh, I've changed my mind now. But I think if you really think about it, there is maybe a little anxiety and fear that is an implication in the discussion. And it's just not real. You want to be able to be convinced by good arguments, but I think in the moment it gets really nerve-wracking if someone's arguing with you like, oh no, I might be wrong, do I have to admit that, I'm not ready to admit that. But you don't have to. And so having a confidence that I'm here not to win an argument, not to convince this other person necessarily, not even to try to force them to change their mind, but to get really good at communicating what I believe and understanding this other person, what they believe, even though they might be saying the same words, they might be meaning something else. I think that's just beginning to start working on some of these skills of civil discourse, which is less about being having your mind change or changing someone else's mind, but rather being really good at communicating how you see truth and learning from other people's their perspective and really going deep into that discussion. So skills or pointers or kind of approaches to those kinds of conversations that you've seen bear a lot of fruit in kind of maybe de-escalating some of the passions in those moments, but also leading to actually fruitful dialogue.
Yeah, I got some real life stories. So, I'll give two different ones. One, when I first got started, I believe I reached a maturity level to do this. Because at one time, and this comes with, I think, age and wisdom, I'm very dogmatic just in my personality, just period. But there was a local coffee shop, they're not running anymore, some years ago in Conway, and one of their employees who worked there, he held a meeting at the coffee shop when it was closed. And he was a member of a white supremacist group in the county. He held a meeting at the coffee shop. The owner didn't know, all that kind of stuff. But it got out that that meeting was there, blah, blah, blah. And social media does its thing, right? So I caught wind of that, and I said, huh. So I called the owner and met with her. And, you know, she was just all disheveled. She was like, I don't believe that stuff, and I don't know why he did that. And, you know, he has a key to the building and all that. He's took it upon himself to hold the meeting there. And I said, okay, got it. And I said, can I reach out to him? Right. And so I reached out to him, and we sat down, and I simply asked him, so my bachelor's degree is in African American history. So it's one thing to read about, you know, white supremacist thought, how that develops, so on and so forth, theoretically. But when you have somebody, have a discussion with somebody, that's a completely different animal. So I sat down with him, I said, hey, I don't look like the person that you know, fully support or like and all that kind of stuff, but I want to understand, why is it that you hold to what you hold, right? And he went through a very substantive, heartfelt explanation of why he believed what he believed. He had relatives who fought in the Civil War on the Confederate side, and what was held to that, and what they passed on, and why they fought in that war. It was passed on, his beliefs about his own family and things that he was seeing in the country, and feeling as if there's things that were dear to him and his traditions that were being threatened or had eroded. And I was very sympathetic to that. I want you to pause for a moment. Hose white supremacist thought looks at me as objectionable, but I am sympathetic to loss. I'm sympathetic to threats to tradition, threats to family. I'm not sympathetic to how you would go about dealing with alleviating those threats, but I'm sympathetic to how you're feeling. So I can walk with you there. Where I stop walking with you is all black people are this way, or all Jews are this way, and so on and so forth. That's where now I can go no further with you, right? But the whole time, I'm seeing a human being made in the image and likeness of God who fundamentally has concerns just like I would as a human being. So I can't argue with you there. Now where the persuasion starts to happen is on the other side, this other stuff that we're talking about. Like, so how can we learn from one another? You know, have you been around other people? You know, point one. So I would say, not that I don't advise most people to go sit down with someone who has those types of beliefs, only because I think it does take a skill and a maturity and prayer and all of those things to be able to sit down with somebody like that. And then, you know what, be able to say, Father Jeff, I still talk to him to this day, and we're cool.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Because the way I approached him and listened to him and actually didn't go into the general, oh, you racist, blah, 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 blah. Because that wouldn't have gone nowhere, right? What's more important here? You know, can I win somebody over? You know, ultimately, you know, can you show them the love of God, ultimately? And I think sometimes we may forget that. Are you trying to win the argument? Or are you trying to show them the glory of God is revealed in Jesus Christ that's in you? What's more important? The second thing is, you know, in dealing with these kind of things that I've worked with, people can can look at you and be like, well, do you believe anything, Philip? Right? I said, yeah, I do, actually. I fundamentally do, right? But part of my calling is to kind of create that table so that different people can come together and talk and learn from one another. And so the other big thing was, in Conway, we had a Confederate flag rally that happened, and the big overpass over the 40 freeway, they hung a big Confederate flag over it. So if you're driving into Conway, you can see it, like, at the major, what's his name? And so that upset a whole lot of people. And it upset a lot of Christians, because there were Black Christians who wondered why their white Christian friends didn't say anything about it, or found out they was kind of supportive of it, you know. And so I had held a two-day, like, meeting of people that wanted to come, you know. And being able to hear someone grieve, being able to hear somebody communicate what hurts, that's important. Again, how can you cultivate not only sympathy, but empathy for an individual? But then also, when someone, this goes back to the objectionable thing, right? You know, I kind of made the comment, I was like, well, you know, the second place loser never hangs a banner. You know, second place person never hangs a banner. So, like, I'm a Lakers fan, you know, when Kobe Bryant and them beat the Celtics, you know, the Celtics don't have a banner up in the Garden that they got second place. I'm like, so why do you still hold the Confederate flag up? You got second place, it's over. Like, why are you still waving it?
That's hard.
It is, right? Find somebody that does that. But anyway, the point of the matter is that flag still matters to people for a particular reason. And again, we live in a pluralistic society. They have every right to wave that flag as much as they want to. Like, everybody's got a flag they want to wave nowadays, right? So wave your flag. But I want to know why and understand why. And what's your affection, AFF, to that flag? And what does that mean for you today? Because what that flag represented and what it was carried for, that's not the reality of America today. So why hold on to it? So asking the why questions, asking more questions than trying to make declarative statements can be helpful as well. That way you can communicate to that individual, I'm in a listening, learning posture right now, and I want to understand. And at some point, you can then turn around and say, this is what I believe about this. Yes. Are there any questions that you want to ask of me? And when they ask you questions, that's your opportunity to state what you believe, but also with understanding in that discussion, again, both of you may walk away still holding on to your things, but you may gain someone that you can have a discussion with, or, I don't know, you find out like they like to play Ultimate Frisbee. And you call them like, hey, you wanna come both play Ultimate Frisbee? Because, again, you're gonna have to have relationships with people that you're gonna have disagreements with. That's what marriage is. and that's what having brothers and sisters is, so on and so forth, right? Because surely you got siblings, you ain't trying to put them out the house yet, because you don't see the world the same, right? All right.
Just a quick addition to that. I mean, it's hard to add to that. That's nice. It's foundational, what you said. In addition to that, when I was doing a lot of private practice and particularly work in marriages, I had rules that I gave folks when we were looking at developing civil discourse in a marriage. And it was called 10 Rules for Fighting Fairly. And it had all the things you think about, you know, listening and not developing your defense while they're talking, you know, which is what most of us do. We're trying to think, how can I show them that they're wrong? No, really listen. But maybe to me the most important thing in that is showing a structure of what I call reflective listening. So after a person says, this is what I believe, and I really don't understand why you don't believe it. Of course, we all have a tendency to go, well, let me tell you why I don't believe it, because this is what I believe. No. Instead of doing that, say, well, what I heard you say was you said that you love that Confederate flag because it had meaning for the generations of your family, and you know, and that's what I heard you say, and that means family to you, and you have all these memories of that. It's not saying you agree with it at all. It's just saying, I heard you, and I can't tell you how powerful it is. I bet you that Father Jeff can tell you how powerful it is for someone to be heard just for exactly what they've said. And to do that, and then for you to have an opportunity to simply say your beliefs, not cutting down theirs, but simply saying yours, and then both of you sitting in the middle, sometimes of a great paradox. That's often called the 20-minute transformation. If you can sit there with two very opposing views without smacking one another, and just being respectful of one another. I'm not saying people are gonna change their views entirely at all, but you may get a little glimpse of something you didn't understand before about that person, or you may find that gray area that you guys can agree on. And that's so important. We have to figure out a way to take all of our walls down. We all come into this adulthood with walls. There have been hurts, there have been problems, so we develop walls to deal with that. And I think the goal here is for you who are informed and mature and understand that every person is a child of God, that it's so important that you come at this with, how can I help take my walls down and make it possible, have a safe space for them to take their walls down as well? Just come at it from that assumption and see if that doesn't make a big difference.
Yeah, I think the first skill that is the easiest one to develop is the listening part of it. Get really good at investigating someone else's position. That's easy to do because you don't have to have any arguments ready. You don't have to have any like stats at your beck and call. All you have to do is know how to ask questions. Like, what do you think about this? Well, why do you think about that? Oh, that's interesting. What does that have? How does that connect with this? Like, pretend you're a journalist. Pretend you're interviewing this person, and your responsibility is to maybe write out their argument later or something. And that's going to require you to do sometimes say like, oh, what I heard you just say was this. Is that what you meant? Mm-hmm. And that what that communicates to people, and it's not just to communicate this. This is just good generally for any kind of relationship. What it communicates is that they have been heard. And what that does to the human person, when you have been heard, it actually lowers your defenses. All right, so don't use this as a manipulative tactic to attack somebody. But it actually lowers down their walls so that they are actually open to hearing what you have to say, what you believe and why you believe it. It may not convince them, but it's only after you have been heard are you going to be open to hear what this other person has to say. And you probably have recognized this in your own life. Have you ever been trying to say something to your parents or describe something to your parents and they're not listening to you very well? They're just saying, go take out the trash or do this because I said so. Meanwhile, you're like, no one understands me. But it actually, because it seems to you that no one is actually listening to what you're trying to say, maybe you don't even know how to say it, but you just know, like, this is what I'm going through. It actually makes you more resistant to what they're trying to ask you to do. Has anyone experienced anything like that in your life, right? Okay, and hopefully there have been moments where you really have been heard, not just by your parents, maybe by teachers or friends, and then you were so willing to do whatever they asked of you later. You ever experienced that? Maybe, or maybe more willing, maybe not so super willing, but recognize that in your own humanity, that is something really important when you're going, when you're trying to have civil discourse. Get really good at not just understanding this other person's position, but through that understanding, to understand the person, not just their idea, but that it actually is giving you a glimpse into the mystery of who they are.
And I think that that really opens things up well for fruitful dialogue. Liz, how much time do we have?
We're good. We've got about 15 minutes.
Okay. But maybe through these last 15 minutes, maybe just put it out there. What are some of the most difficult discussions that y'all have, if you had in your version of what civil discourse would be in your friends, just the things at the lunch table, who knows, some of the most difficult discussions that y'all are having?
All right, y'all stand with me.
I'd say abortion and the existence of God.
Okay. And say just a little bit, you don't have to go, you don't have to reveal too much. What makes those discussions hard, do you think?
I think it's, or at least with the people I was talking about it with, they didn't want to listen to an opposing viewpoint. They were very closed in and didn't have like a willingness to listen. And so a lot of time it can be kind of just talking to a brick wall in a way, is you're just saying things and not getting heard.
Sure. What made you think that they weren't? But what were they doing or saying that made it seem that way?
Things like interrupting, making, like, just saying the same thing over and over again, like getting aggressive, things like that.
Sure.
Any bits of advice, maybe things you might suggest to try to change the way that conversation's going?
Oh, I think both of y'all have said this, but I'm just going to throw this out there. To act like a journalist, as Father Jeff said, and rather than telling him where you're coming from, ask him or her where they're coming from, and really to see if they could give more than that one sentence it sounds like you were getting over and over again. You know, just the curiosity is a word that I really love, because we tend to get our dander up. We tend to get really upset when people don't agree with us, and so we forget that it's really curious to understand, where is this person coming from? They may have 10 things that happened to them already in their life that really made them believe there's not a God. How could there be a God if this is happening in my life? To get to that level with a person is a real challenge, but it's so worth it, because usually, I think 99% of the time, there's a lot of pain where you find those kinds of convictions.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. One, when you recognize you're up against a brick wall, don't pretend like somehow you are the supernatural being who can break through that wall and mold it back into a person to have this discussion with you.
Yeah.
But like Dr. Simon said, it is often the case that there's something deep, a wound or a fear that it takes only a very safe person for that person to reveal that. And so make sure, if you want to go that deep with this other person, you have to make sure to communicate as well as you can. You're a safe person to communicate things that are disagreeable, right? Like, it's okay if you don't see the things the way I do on abortion. Okay in the sense like you're a human being who's free to think however you want. But letting them know, like, there won't be a large war that's going to erupt after you reveal that reason. Like, oh, that's the reason? Let me tell you why you're wrong about this. You know. But instead, if you have kind of cultivated the relationship such that you are just interested in them as a human being, and you're trying to get to know them more, not to convince them necessarily. Ultimately, we want other people to see the revelation of Jesus Christ and to follow it. That's I want that for everybody. I want everyone to see Jesus Christ as the Son of God, you know? But that's what we want, but that's not what we expect from every conversation. And so kind of communicating things that you are a safe person to reveal things that are disagreeable, and able to disagree in a way that actually makes it a pleasant experience rather than an all-out battle.
I'll be brave. What's going on?
I think the topic of homosexuality, like, because a lot of people think as Catholics we hate a person because they're gay or whatever, and they don't want to understand that we don't hate the person. We just don't agree that homosexuality is the right way to live.
Sure. Any, do they just outright say that to you, you think? Like, oh, you Catholic, you hate me because I'm gay, or you hate gay people?
Like, I've talked with some people about it that have said that, like, you're Catholic, so you hate gay people. But other people have just kind of, like, implied it.
Sure.
And they just don't flat out say it, but
sure.
They definitely think that just because I'm Catholic, I hate them.
Right. How do you usually respond?
I say, like, I respect you, like, you're a human, I respect you. You have dignity. But as a Catholic, we believe that love is between a man and a woman. Like, a sexual kind of relationship sure. is between a man and a woman. And that sexual relationship should be after they're married and to create a family.
Sure. So you reassure them, like, no, I love everybody.
Yeah.
I respect everybody, even when I disagree with them. But this is what I believe about them. That's what you said.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Any suggestions or thoughts?
No, I mean, I think in where we're at today, there is this to shut down the discussion. There is this assigning of hate to a difference in viewpoint, right? So, and it's a I like to see it as like kind of a light ad hominem attack, right? They're not like
describe what an ad hominem.
Oh, so essentially, you and I have a disagreement, and I'd be like, "Well, I don't like your beard. You're just scruffy looking," right? Essentially, what I've demonstrated is I have no logical rationale to respond to the information that you presented to me. So what I've done is seek to just call you names, and you know that's the most elementary way I can define ad hominem in this setting. So with that being said, again, we each one of us have these beliefs that are resting on some fundamental values, right? And can the individual on the other side of the table understand that while also and so you have to clearly communicate this. I have a full respect for you and love for you. But in this regard, looking at it as a behavior from your vantage point, right? They may not look at it as a behavior from their vantage point, but from your vantage point, you're looking at it as a behavior. But if what you're saying is I have to accept this behavior, right? What other behaviors am I then to also accept that run against my fundamental values and beliefs? You know, because then you're asking me to change fundamentally who I am and what is dear to me. But you're not willing to be persuaded the other direction, you know? So again, especially with that like particular discussion, again, it's demonstrating that you love the individual, right? You know, y'all gonna hang out. It's just on this one area. That's where you're gonna have to respect how I feel about this, just like you're asking me to respect how I feel about you feel about this. Like, so will the larger relationship prevail so that we can respect and love one another, even though we have this disagreement. You know, and it doesn't mean I'm going to stand out in front of your house or something like that and be like, repent. I mean,
judgy.
You know, and all that. Well, that's a one-on-one conversation with that individual, you know, to call them to change. But you're not doing it in such a way that it comes across as it's confirming a stereotype that they may believe you about you, you know? And that's the other thing you want to break. I'm not like the caricature or, how old are you?
How old are you?
18? Okay. Or, you know, particularly it's your age and younger, right? That's something that they've heard in the house, right? So do you really believe that? Or are you just parroting what you've heard in the house? Are you parroting what you've seen on TikTok and all the other stuff? What do you believe about this? You know, and
that's the other thing, I think, largely even dealing with the topic here regarding homosexuality at this age. Is this what you believe, or are you just parroting what you just heard? And you just have no response to it. You're just parroting it. Like the abortion. Like, really? I'm looking around the room, right? Experientially, none of y'all should be participating in the behavior that leads to the possibility of the discussion of abortion, right? So at your age, it's all just theoretical. You're just, what, parroting what you've heard. But until you have all those life experiences as an adult, right, then that takes on a whole different vantage point, right? Like, you shouldn't even be considering about being a mom or dad right now. So why are we talking about this? Why are we even talking about abortion, right? So it's those kind of things I think about even when I hear about some of those discussions at this age and younger. Like, why are we even talking about this, you know? But I'm not saying there's been young women who've gone through that experience, but that's a rarity, not the norm, so.
About 3 years ago, Pax Christi had a program called Welcome Home. And that program was designed to invite LGBTQ individuals to come back in and re-experience this church of ours. What we found in these groups is that it was mostly families, parents, for example, of kids who would come out to them, or young adults who would come out to them. And because the individuals themselves did not feel safe to come to this meeting. They were so afraid, I think, of being rebuffed, being told that they weren't, that there was something, you know, horribly wrong with them, and that we wouldn't accept them. But what I found out from these families, and it helped me so much, and it goes to what Dr. Fletcher just said, is everyone needs a safe place to be who they are. I mean, and to be heard. And so many of these families needed to hear that and learn that, because they were so terrified, so afraid that their child who had come out to them was going to go to hell, or they had all of this thought about their child, and they were so afraid that they were being angry with their kids. They were pushing them out of the house. They were saying, if you do this, you can't live here. That's not the way. That's not the way of love. That's not seeing the child of God in every person, particularly your own child. And what it made me realize is the importance of having that safe environment for everybody. So when you guys run into that, if you can become that safe person, where this person can be real with you, let you know what they're going through, let you know how they're feeling. At this age, it may or may not be a real thing for them, but if they can't kind of work through it, then it's going to be much, much harder. So to have a person they can talk to is invaluable, that won't come at them critically all the time about it, you know?
Yeah, especially because the way they put it is, you hate me because I'm gay.
Yeah.
They're not saying, you have this argument that makes you conclude that I am not worthy or something. So there's kind of a knee-jerk reaction as a Catholic when someone says that. No, I love you, and let me tell you why the church thinks it this way about X, Y, Z. That's a very real reflex you feel, but you don't have to bring that up just to make sure everyone knows that you're not condoning this behavior. Stick to what they said. What makes you think that I hate you? Or what makes you think that I hate these people? I love them. And then start thinking, well, maybe there is a way I can start acting more compassionately toward these people in a way that doesn't condone the behavior, but recognizes their dignity as a human person. Because, I mean, think about someone like, I don't know, Mother Teresa. Do you think many people doubt her love? Anyone know any really good arguments that she made? She probably did make some, don't get me wrong, but she's not known for that. She is known for loving every creature that she encountered and just wanted to bring Christ to them. So keep that in the back of your mind at some of those discussions, when they, especially if they frame it off the bat with "you hate me" or there's hatred, like, whoa, what makes you say that? I love you. How can I help communicate more that I actually care about you than what you're feeling right now? But also, I think that's a, hate to bring it up right here again, but I think that's the most challenging thing when you're young, is when someone says something that I disagree with, or I know they act in a way that maybe the church says is sinful, how do I relate to them in a way that doesn't condone their actions, right? And so that's a real challenge of maturity and growing in these kind of dialogues, is letting someone be themselves in your presence. That doesn't mean you have to affirm every single thing that they say. It means rather that you're really good at listening to what they're going through, and kind of in this active listening sense, almost rephrasing what they've said to let them know that you've heard them. But if they ask, like when someone turns around and says, well, what do you think about this? Then you can actually respond, but in a way that's compassionate. Because the church does nothing more than suggest, this is the way that Christ revealed the way back to him. We will always call you to it, but we recognize your freedom to say yes or no to that invitation. It breaks our hearts when people say no. Let your heart break. But we also rejoice when they say yes, and we encourage them along the way.
I love that, because I think that's what my thing, I was going to ask you just briefly, I think you've answered it. If you haven't, based on what I say, just kind of in conclusion, how do you walk with somebody? Because, you know, our Pope is so gracious and kind, and that you walk with people where they are. So that's part of it. So does anybody have anything else? It's like, how do we walk with somebody? Because I think about this in my own life. I deal with a lot of young people who are going through things. And so I'm constantly saying, how do I walk with them without condoning but still loving? And so if you just had any sort of insight in that, because I find that the most challenging thing for me in my life.
I'll say my thing real quick.
Yeah.
It's kind of just repeating what I just said, is you let your heart break when you see them choosing things that you know are not good for them. And you communicate to them, you want the fullness of life for them, and that you think the only way to that fullness of life is the way of life that Christ revealed. So that's what you want for them. But when they say no to it, you let your heart break, but you don't abandon the relationship. And when they are acting in ways that are in accordance with the gospel, you rejoice with them and you celebrate it. Those are the things. But the hardest part is letting your heart break when they're saying no, and finding a way, how do I relate to this person in the midst of that heartache? Because they're, if what you believe is true, then the way they're living is actually leading them to deeper sadness, to more misery. And then we don't want that for anybody. But you know, I'll pass it on.
I just have a very quick thing, because it came to my mind when Liz asked that question. That reminds me of St. Francis's quote to us. Go out and preach the gospel, and only when necessary use words. So show people by who you are, by your actions, who you are, that you're safe, and that you're not going to condemn them for who they are. So important. Show them by your actions.
There's a lot of different Jesuses running around. All I can say is that when I just open the book and read the Gospels, I see a Jesus who loves people and calls them on their stuff. That's what I see. He does both. And the calling on the stuff is in accordance with the principles and values of the kingdom, right? And the compassion is coming from the principles and values of the kingdom. And he didn't move from that. He called the woman at the well out on her stuff.
Right.
Zacchaeus called him on his stuff. The woman the woman who was caught in adultery. I always thought that was funny because where is the man at? But anyway, she wasn't doing it by herself. But either way, well, he called out her, but he also called out those who was about to stone, right? Mm-hmm. So this Jesus that is just all compassion and never calls anybody on their stuff does not exist. And this Jesus just calls everybody out on their stuff and shows no compassion. He doesn't exist. So it's the discerning of action and then when to speak, right? And then how Jesus did it, you know, was always kind of interesting. He was like, so the one you're with, you're not married with, right? I mean, at that point, she knew exactly what he was talking about, right? But he said it, right? And so for us, like I work with, you know, the homeless, and I'll talk about this later, and then like some individuals that would be considered like slumlords. What would I look like just to be showing compassion and not call out a slumlord on this stuff? Like, what would I look like? And you would be like, dang, Philip, like, I'm glad you helped the homeless, but the slumlord's still doing their stuff, right? But for some reason, when we go out into the world, we're like asked to choose. Either be compassionate or just throw flame balls at people. And I'm like, I think there's a way you can do both, you know, and do it in such a way that's compelling and powerful. And is safe, but then is not safe. Just a little bit.
Little thing,
right? Even a little bit.
A little
thing. Because people got, but that doesn't come from us. It should come from the awesomeness of who God is, ultimately. We're just vessels to be used by Him. To ultimately win people, bring people into discipleship and following Christ. So,
wow. So, guys, how helpful was this? Very helpful. I mean, I appreciate y'all so much. Maybe I'll take another stab at my neighbor.
Well, not a stab.
Well, no, yeah. Maybe I'll try once again. They probably want to know what's going on if I invite them to dinner.
Yeah,
they
did.
Yeah, I didn't mean to stab, guys. Yeah. I didn't mean to stab. Okay. No, I don't want your pocketbook. All right, any final questions? I don't want it, but I want to appreciate their time, and I know Dr. Fletcher has given us just a little more time. If you don't mind, we'll take a quick break. Any other final questions? This was like fundamentally helpful to me as a 63-year-old woman. So thank you. So what do we say?
Thank you.
You're all wrong now, let me tell you why.
Yeah, so let's take, guys, I want to honor Dr. Fletcher because I know he's got a lot on his plate.
Hey, if you found something of value, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Find us on Facebook at Dr. Philip Fletcher. Find us on Twitter at Phil Fletcher. And as always, visit us on the website philipfletcher.org.